Right, good evening everybody. It is 6 o'clock, so I'd like to commence with tonight's meeting. Can I say welcome to Rydale District Council Planning Meeting held in public this evening. There are a few housekeeping matters to go through. If a fire alarm goes off, it will be for real, and you should leave by the exit on your left or on the doors behind me and assemble in the car park. Conveniences are located in the corridor, where you will also find a coffee machine and a drinking water dispenser. We have a number of speakers this evening. Each speaker will have 3 minutes to present their case, and I will warn you when they have 30 seconds left. So can I ask the clerk, do we have any apologies for absence, please?
Apologies have been received from Councillor Burr and Councillor Windress. Councillor Riby will substitute for Councillor Burr and Councillor Frank will substitute for Councillor Windress.
Thank you very much. Do any members have any declarations of interest, please? Gosh.
Thank you, Chair. Item 6 on the agenda, I've been lobbied.
Councillor Graham.
I've been lobbied for item 6.
Thank you. Councillor Cleary.
Item 6, 13 stroke 14 and 16, I've been lobbied. They're personal, non-prejudicial, non-pecuniary. And for the sake of completeness, the item 15, I'm sure it will come up in the report, but the applicant is a close relative of a district councillor.
Councillor Frank.
Item 15, the applicant's known to me. Personal, not prejudicial.
Councillor Hope.
Thank you, Chairman. Item 6 and item 15 also personal, non-prejudicial.
Councillor Mason.
Item 17, I have personal and I think it's prejudicial interest in that one.
Councillor Potter.
Yeah, back in the mists of time, I was lobbied on item 6 as well.
Councillor Andrew.
Items 6 and 10, Chair, personal, non-prejudicial, have been lobbied, and also item 17.
Thank you. And can I say from the Chair, item 9. I know the applicants, however, it is personal, non-prejudicial and a non-pecuniary interest. And also item 6, because I've been lobbied. Okay, thank you. Can I ask members, you've all had a copy of the minutes from the last meeting. Are members happy with the content of these minutes, and would somebody please propose them and second them if that's the case? Mr. Cleary.
Can I move acceptance of those as a correct record?
Councillor Graham, thank you. Can members please vote on those minutes now? Thank you. That's 8 for 1 abstention. The minutes are accepted. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is urgent business, and I have no urgent business. So we'll move on to the schedule of items to be determined by the committee. And we'll start at item 6, please, which is the field off Hunger Lane, Wombleton, and that starts at page 10, members. And I think it's Mr. Housden to present.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chairman. In fact, the site is, as you'll have seen, there's a very detailed officer report before you tonight, Chairman, This is picking me up. And in fact, the site is off Hunger Hill Lane, Wombleton. And this application was originally submitted in July last year and has been to planning committee on the agenda on at least two occasions, I think in November last year and December as well, which is obviously before the previous election, so there are at least three members in the room who won't have experienced that those committee meetings. But nevertheless, there is a detailed report on the agenda papers, Chairman. I think the report in itself is in excess of 50 pages in length and goes into some detail. But what I'd also like to draw members' attention to on the late pages, which I hope all members have got a copy of, which are further responses and representations we've received since the agenda papers were published. And they are pages 3 to 12 of those papers. And in addition to that, I've also got two other updates, which I think you should have had circulated round a plan that was provided by the applicant, Mr. Herbert, which was showing a legal right of access across the part of the airstrip for the owner of the adjacent potato store, which is Mr. Rook. So hopefully you've had a chance to have a look at that. The essence of the responses of the late pages, the first of which is from an objector, which is, I think it's Dr. Slater, actually, who had expressed concerns about the aviation aspects of the development, which is on page 3, and onto page 4, which is an objection from Stuart Slater. But I think the essence of some of those are distilling to, despite the detail in the report, the concern that there are areas of the eastern side of the runway strip which are outside of the red line of the application site, and consequently he feels there are problems in terms of securing adequate control of that area because it lies beyond the scope of the applicant, and therefore he has remaining concern in terms of aviation safety. The next response is from Nigel Rockcliffe, who is a consultant who's acting on behalf of Grace Max Limited, and you'll note that does respond to some of the content of the officer report, and also attached to that letter attaches for members further information some of the detailed landscaping plans which are shown as part of the scheme, and also sectional drawings of the planting, particularly of the Bund area and the periphery of the site. For new members, I would wish to stress that this application originally started out in life as proposing 65 lodges, and through the course of processing and negotiating the application, we're now dealing with 43 lodges on the site, so there's quite a significant decrease in the number of lodges now being proposed. The next letter is from the applicant, Mr. Herbert, and it makes reference to an offer of installing what he describes as frangible fence. Mr. Herbert, I think, is registered to speak tonight, so he could probably go on to talk about the detail of the fence, but the link, if you click the link, takes you to the detail of a fibre fence that could be used on the periphery of the site. The next letter, email, is from a Mr. Shane Savage, who has been engaged, and this was dated the 8th of August, by Mr. Herbert to advise on the airfield, on the use of the airstrip and the aviation issues. And you'll note from pages 10, 11 and 12 onwards that those pages pages 10 and 11 rather, set out Mr. Savage's credentials in terms of aviation and responding to the recommendation of the report, particularly with regard to the reasons for refusal. In essence, email is requesting that the application be deferred to enable him to visit the site, carry out a full assessment of what he believes to be the safe aircraft and air manoeuvring safety issues, and to respond. But he does indicate that deferral could need a minimum of 3 months, so we're possibly looking at a deferral for another 3 committee cycles if we accede to this request. And then the final letter, Chairman, is from Kylie Chapman, who I believe has been instructed by the applicants to work on what is referred to in the report as the Section 106 unilateral agreement relating to the potato store adjacent to the boundary of the site. And those of you familiar with the locality will know that the potato store is an unfettered planning potato storage use with potential for noise disturbance issues that are set out in the officer report. We were led to believe, and email exchanges were suggesting, that agreement was close to being reached between the applicant, who doesn't own the potato store, and the adjacent landowner, who does own the potato store, to seek to control its use to limit noise so that the development then could become acceptable adjacent to the holiday lodge accommodation. However, I did have a phone call earlier today, which has been followed up by an email from Claire Douglas, working for Crombie Wilkinson Solicitors, acting on behalf of Mr. Rook, who at this stage are just confirming that the Rooks are no longer able to enter into the unilateral undertaking regarding noise mitigation, which would be required on their potato store at this point. And so that creates a sort of potential problem, Chairman, at this point, because that's the only advice that we had, even though we thought the issue was going to be addressed. The issue before us tonight, Chairman, is very much one of you have the application is before you on the agenda. It's your decision whether you defer the application again. The advice of the council's locum solicitor is that given the nature of the comment that we received and responses that we received from particularly Mr. Savage, that it would be prudent for us to await the applicant's response on the matter of aviation safety, and that a deferral would be, in his opinion, the most appropriate course of action to await that report. That inevitably will delay consideration of the application, but that's what the applicant has requested of us. And so that's where we stand at the moment, Chairman. I think if members are minded to defer the application for that, and clearly not everybody's totally familiar with the site, I would suggest, Chairman, in that eventuality, that we take the opportunity of visiting the site, not just from the adjacent roadways, but actually getting onto the site so that members can better appreciate the relationship between the proposed use and the existing aviation uses of the runway to the west. So that's the update, Chairman. I am conscious that there are three people who registered to speak, but I think it might be appropriate to hear whether members wish to carry on tonight or whether they wish to defer.
Given the comments by the Chief Planning Officer, would have members got any views on this? I am very happy to defer this item and move it from the chair, but I'm happy if members want to come in and let me. Councillor Potter.
Yeah, having read through all this stuff in detail on at least two occasions, and this will make it three, I'm taking an increasingly dim view of this whole affair, particularly as this has been with us for over a year now, and I think the applicant should have sorted all this nonsense out well before now, but I can certainly support you and second for a deferral.
Councillor Ryby, Tony Ryby, I represent the people that live in Wombleton. I am aware of the site. I have read maybe not in as much detail as I should have done because there are a lot of detail to absorb. However, I subscribe to the previous thoughts. It has been going on for a year. It is kind of a tactic that is sometimes used with a difficult planning application is to get deferral. I think there's lots and lots and lots of evidence from people in the know about aviation that's already been spoken. Putting lots of people living on the side of a runway is not a good idea. I agree with, you know, the thoughts of our officer, although he's happy to defer, but I know he's given it a lot of thought and I believe he's come to the right decision. And so I am against deferment. I would like to see the thing moved on today. Maybe I shouldn't use a pun, but it comes to my mind as I wrote here tonight that we couldn't be accused of putting the telescope to the to the blind eye and wait for the outcome of more conditions from a retired naval officer, because I believe Gary Housden's looked at it and looks at the picture very carefully, and he knows exactly what we're facing. So I propose that we do move on and deal with this subject tonight. Thank you.
Councillor Andrews.
I would support the local member chair, so if he's proposed that, I will second him. So that it then becomes a straight for or against vote, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Andrews. Well, I moved it from the chair and it was seconded by Councillor Potter for deferment. Has any other member got anything to say on this? Otherwise, can we please move to the vote to defer this matter and take it from there? Interesting, 5-4 and 5 against. So, it's my casting vote, so I am going to defer this matter. I think for various reasons, including legal ones, I think we need to defer this matter and bring it back again to committee. And it will also allow new members to go and have the site visit, so that when we come back...
Do you want to make arrangements for a site inspection?
Do you want to do that now at the end of the meeting?
Can
we make arrangements to do that now, members? Agree a date where we can go to a site meeting? Do we need to... So can I propose from the chair that we have a site meeting, particularly for new members who are not familiar with the site? Councillor Potter?
I'll second that.
Thank you. We need to vote on that now. Yeah, right, okay. Members, can we please move to the vote on... That's 9-4 and one abstention, so we will be having a site visit. Can we do that at the end? Can we make arrangements at the end of the meeting to find a date that suits everybody? Thank you. Right, moving on to item 7, which is page 85 of your agenda. Just bear with me while I put myself back in. Sorry, I can't see it because it's disappeared off the screen. So, item 7, members, is a major full application for the erection of an agricultural livestock building for the fattening of pigs with area of hard standing and 2 number feed bins, and that's land east of Sherburn World Farm, Sherburn Moulton. Anna, who's presenting this? Oh, who's doing this?
I'm doing this one.
You're doing it. Thank you, Gary.
Yes, sir. Chairman, this is another application that was deferred from an earlier meeting in June, and the reason it was deferred at that meeting, members will perhaps recall that we'd had a request for a drainage impact assessment, and so there were no other issues at that point in time, Chairman, but we just weren't in a position to deal with it without that report, which was required by both the Environment Agency because of the source protection zone, the groundwater, and also the surface water drainage issues from the lead local flood authority. And what we have since received is a detailed report on those two issues from Alan Wood Associates, which is a very thorough report in my opinion. We have unfortunately, only heard back. We were expecting responses, but I think we got a lot of out-of-office, I'm-on-holiday type emails, I'm afraid. The lead local flood authority have confirmed that the detail is acceptable. They are, however, just waiting for confirmation on one of the surface water calculations, which has been confirmed only this afternoon by the applicant's agent, and we're expecting the surface water drainage to be cleared today, Chairman, or tomorrow. The Environment Agency matter relates to protection of the source protection zone and making sure there's no pollution of the groundwater, and although the as a layperson I've read the report and it appears to make sense that they're not allowing any pollutants into the ground and it's all collected, we are still awaiting the Environment Agency's confirmation that the arrangements and the capacities of those are sufficient. So if members are happy with this in all other respects, now we've got the report, Chairman, I would recommend that the approval is delegated to me, subject to clearance from the Environment Agency and the final clearance from the lead local flood authority. So that's the amended recommendation.
We do have a speaker on this item. Oh, no, we don't. We don't have a speaker. Beg your pardon. The local member for comment is who's nearest? Probably. Councillor McKenzie? Sherman? Oh, sorry, questions first, members. Sorry. Yeah, no, if members have any questions on the officer's report, please, let's have them now. So I'm going to go to the most local member, I think, which is Councillor McKenzie, I think, who is the nearest one. Sorry, Councillor McKenzie.
Thank you, Chair. Well, I am not familiar with this area. It is quite a long way from me, so no comment, really.
Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm very happy to take this. The report is quite clear that in all other respects it's acceptable. Forgive me if I repeat myself, but it is an investment in agriculture. It is something that we support. It is well screened by existing planting and it's close to an existing steading. I'm very happy to move approval.
Thank you, Councillor Cleary. Councillor Hope.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. Yes, I echo all that's just been said and second that.
If there are no other comments from members, then let's go to the vote, please, members. It's been moved and seconded for approval. Thank you, members. That's unanimous. Item 8 on the agenda is demolition of existing buildings and erection of an 84-bedroomed hotel with ancillary restaurant bar, erection of 3 number light industrial units, parking, drainage and landscaping, and an area of habitat for great crested newts. And I think it's Jill that's going to present on this. Thank you, Jill.
Thank you, Chairman. There is one very important update to this report that I need to make very clear. The main body of the report refers to some neighbour responses that have been received following consultation on the latest revisions to the scheme. There's one objection from a B&B owner that lives outside the town, and there is a letter from the nearest neighbour to the property confirming that changes to the scheme, changes to the design of the scheme, in particular their access, have resolved objections that he had. The main body of the report also refers to the parish council objections. Over the life of the application, since it was submitted, there were four other representations that have been made. They've not pulled through on the system, and they're not immediately apparent on the website. So it's important that I summarise what they're saying. Three people have raised some concerns and objections when the scheme was originally submitted. And the issues that they have raised, three other people, I should say, and the issues that they have raised include the impact on other businesses and supply chain businesses, the scale of the building and its visual impact, that road infrastructure will be unable to cope, that the town is not big enough to support the number of tourists that will be generated by the development, concerns relating to the loss of newt habitat and drainage, harm to hedgerows and strip fields, and the RDC ourselves identified some constraints with the site through the plan making process. I think, Chairman, most of those issues are covered in the report. What I would say is the specific reference to the plan making process. Clearly, as part of the plan making process, we did look at this site. We looked at this site because at the time the landowner asked us to consider the site for residential development. Again, what I would say is that we identified all the constraints associated with the site as part of that process, but we were assessing the merits of the site on the basis of what the landowner had proposed it for at the time, which was residential development. Plan-making process is also very different to the decision-making process. We're looking at in the plan-making process, we're looking at the relative merits of sites in comparison to each other. So it's a different process, really. The other representation that was made when the application was first consulted on was a representation in support of the scheme. That was from a resident of the town who believes that it will bring tourism, money and jobs to the town, that it's an important development for the town, and as a young person, a young resident, they support this. I believe it's time for change, and this is the first step in transforming the town. So those additional comments were received in response to the initial consultation. I have to say that there have been two reconsultations on the amended design of the scheme. That's to the access to the site and also to address effectively the mass of the development. As originally submitted, the scheme had a dual-pitched roof, which made the mass of the building bigger than it is currently now proposed with mono-pitched roofs. We haven't had any further responses from these people in response to the further consultations. So I apologise for that, Chairman, but I have I've outlined the in essence what those additional representations have said. All of the issues that the application raised, I think, are considered in the report. The main issues really relate to the principle of the development in this location, the impacts that are associated with the development, in particular design, landscape, amenity, and impact on protected species, but also the benefits, I think, that will come with the development. I'll just quickly run through some of the pictures that we have, just so that members can orientate themselves. Okay, so this is Thornton Road, heading toward, leaving Pickering, heading towards Thornton Liddell, and effectively this is the site here. This is the nearest neighbour, number 36 Thornton Road. The occupant of that property had originally had some concerns and objected to the scheme when the access was proposed very close to the access to his property. The access to the site is now where effectively there is an existing site access to a small bungalow on the site. And that has meant that the occupier of this property has confirmed that he has no objections to the scheme in terms of the impact on him. It's an interesting site. The land does sort of rise and fall away. It also falls away to the south. But in essence, that's the site there with the access just being almost where that car is there. That's looking back towards the town. This is the existing site access to the bungalow. That's where the access to the site is now proposed. And that's the bungalow that's currently on the site. That will be removed and the access is created here with the visibility splays, that would be about 34.5 metres along the side of Thornton Road. So the access to the site is within the 30 mile an hour limits of the town. This is the site just in relation to the edge of Thornton Road Industrial Estate. That is the western edge of the industrial estate. And effectively, the hotel building will sit behind that. I mean, these trees are in leaf now. Probably from that vantage point, you're unlikely to see much of that building with those trees in leaf. But I think it's fair to say that the size of the building, which is up to sort of, I think its highest point at the pitch of one of the roofs is about 12.5, 12.7 metres. It will be visible from approaches, immediate approaches along Thornton Road itself. Just to give you an indication, the racks there in the builder's merchant yards are about 5 metres high, so that land is falling away a little bit. And I think that the main elevation of the hotel that you'll see there, certainly the three-storey section, is about just over 10 metres, so it's about twice the height of those racks. Again, that's just a little bit further to the west, looking back towards the site. This is just a view from the immediate neighbour's garden. It was taken at the time when he did have concerns about the access which was going to run along this boundary. You just get a view of the top of the bungalow there, but actually there's quite substantial hedges there. A lot of hedging is to be retained, and there will be some fencing that is erected between those two boundaries. That's just looking from his garden down towards the site. Again, that's just an indication of how dense the existing hedge and screening will be. There will be some management of hedges, but most of the hedges, certainly on all of the boundaries of the site, with the exception of Thornton Road itself, the main elevation, most of those hedges are retained. There will be some hedgerow management, but there will also be some additional planting, tree and hedge planting. This is taken from within the site, in the sort of, I would say, the northeast corner. So the industrial estate is the other side of that boundary. You just catch a glimpse of some of the buildings at the industrial estate, the southern end of the site. So it's a linear strip field part of the Pickering strip field system. The main hotel building will be laid out on a north-south axis on this side of the site, with the industrial units in the bottom southern eastern corner, access through here and car parking. And there is a section of the site along the southern boundary and as part of the western boundary that is going to be set aside for habitat creation, which includes some terrestrial habitat and an aquatic pond for newts. That's just looking across at the towards the east. That's again the bungalow on the site. That's looking from the southeastern corner back up the site to the bungalow, Thornton Road here. It's one of the industrial units on Thornton Road Industrial Estate. Just as an indication of the height, I think the height of that building to the ridge is about 8.5 metres. So that just gives an indication of the scale of some of the surrounding buildings. Clearly this building is going to be bigger than those, but it is seen within the context of those industrial buildings. They're the two industrial buildings at the southern side of the site within the Thornton Road Industrial Estate. And actually there are industrial buildings behind there, which I think is an indication really of how mature some of this hedging is along that boundary. That's just the top eastern corner of the site, so just on the other side of that hedge is Thornton Road. that's a view from the industrial estate, looking up into the site. That's the southern boundary of the site. And that's, again, from the industrial estate looking across. So the building effectively will sit behind this building here. I've tried very hard to find more longer distance views of Thornton Road Industrial Estate approaching Pickering from the east. It's actually very difficult. I think it's a combination of topography and the way in which the road runs. But that's a lay-by in the road from Thornton Liddale, and actually the industrial estate is sat here. Very, very difficult to get long distance views. I think any views of the building will be very much seen within the context of an existing industrial complex. And this is just a view, similar point really. This is a view from Ruffel Lane, so to the north of the site, looking down at Thornton Road Industrial Estate, and effectively the building will sit in here. Chairman, I think clearly just in terms of the issues that it raises, the uses of the site, the hotel and the bar are town centre uses, and we have to be very, very careful about where we locate those uses. The applicant has provided information that's allowed us to look at the site in conjunction with other locations, and I think we're very confident that there aren't any sort of sequentially preferable sites for these sorts of uses. I think the proposed industrial units effectively will operate like an extension to the existing industrial estate, and in some respects I think the nature of the uses that are proposed do provide a bit of a buffer really between the existing industrial estate, which is largely unrestricted in terms of its uses, and the town. It is a site which is on the main road and on public transport routes. So I think for various reasons, we do think it is probably the most appropriate and best location for the uses proposed. I think we take the view that in terms of the impacts associated with the development, that county highways are satisfied that it can be safely accessed and there is capacity on the highway network. Our environmental health officers are confident that any noise issues can be mitigated. And certainly we countryside officer biodiversity advice has meant that we're actually the compensation and mitigation package that has come about or is proposed as a result of the loss of newt foraging habitat is appropriate. In fact, it's very good. I think we've looked at the design of the building very, very carefully. I think we think that the amendments to the scheme have helped to reduce the mass of the building. That it is through now what is now effectively a more modern design. It is something which better reflects its context and its position in relation to the industrial estate. It's not trying to compete with the historic character of Pickering. It's distinct from that. And I think together with landscaping, which won't screen it, but it will soften the building, I think we think that in its landscape and visual impact is acceptable. It does involve the loss of a strip field system or a strip field. There is no doubt about that. That's not something which we can mitigate. But there are benefits, there are economic benefits associated with the proposal, and they're detailed in the report. And I think we take the view that on balance they outweigh the loss of the strip field. Madam Chairman, the recommendation is one of conditional approval, but that again, it's similar to the issue that Gary raised. It's subject to any additional requirements of the local Leigh Flood Authority. We're awaiting their confirmation that they're happy with all of the material. The conditions in the report are broadly as outlined, but we will need to make some minor changes to those in relation to some timing and commencement issues. So I think the recommendation is changed to allow to give delegated authority for Gary to approve the application if that's what members would like.
Thank you, Jill. We do have a speaker this evening. We have a Mr. Adam Hurld. If he wants to come forward to speak on this item, please. Good evening. It's the large button at the bottom. You've got 3 minutes. I will give you an indication when you're at 2.5 that you've got 30 seconds left.
I thought it was quiet. Do you want me to go again, or...? Thanks. I'm Adam Hurld. I'm the Development Director for JOMAS Developments. We're working with Premier Inn to deliver this hotel and light industrial scheme, and our proposals to date are a culmination of several months of technical assessments and an exhaustive design process. We've worked closely with the Council's officers and local community to achieve a scheme which is both suitable and can benefit Pickering and the wider district for many years to come. We've met with the Pickering Inn Business Group together with Premier Inn representatives to discuss how the operation can successfully work with the local business and hotel community. Premier Inn are in the process of completing a research project examining how their hotels successfully operate alongside independent hotels and guest houses, and this will be shared with the group shortly. We believe there is a strong need for a hotel such as this in the district, which will complement the existing hotel and guest house offer and supports the tourism policy of the local plan strategy. Upon completion, the development will contribute significantly to the local and wider economy through increased visitor spend, salary expenditure, and additional business rates. The hotel will provide a number of new year-round jobs for local residents, and Premier Inn have several employment schemes, work placements, and training programs specifically for local residents struggling to find employment. In total, the development will create 45 construction jobs and 25 full-time equivalent operational jobs once completed. In addition to the hotel, the industrial units will provide much-needed expansion space for local businesses in a sustainable location next to the existing industrial estate. These units will be targeted at smaller and start-up companies, offering manageable, flexible space and help retain employment and businesses within the local economy. A thorough design process has been followed with a number of iterations discussed with the council officers, leading to what we believe will be a highly appropriate, contemporary, modern development which will sit comfortably with the surrounding uses and complying with policies SP16 and SP20 in the local plan strategy. Energy efficiency is a key consideration in the design, construction and operation of the scheme. The hotel will deliver a minimum BREEAM very good standard, which is a base requirement for Premier Inn. It will be designed to achieve a 35% improvement against the Part L building regs, which will include elements such as photovoltaic, solar panels, air and ground source heat pumps. Comprehensive ecological studies have been undertaken, and the proposals include for a great crested new pond, an ecological area providing connectivity to surrounding foraging habitats and existing breeding ponds, amongst various other proposed ecological enhancements. We're proposing to retain all existing trees and hedges on site where possible, with additional native tree and hedge planting being undertaken to reduce the visual impact of the development and enhance the ecological areas. Finally, the Highways Authority consider the proposed access acceptable and recommend we widen the footpath fronting the site, connecting to the wider footpath network and bus stops close by. In summary, I trust you will agree this is an exciting opportunity for Pickering and the wider authority, and I encourage you to follow the officer's recommendation to approve this application.
Thank you very much. I'll open it up for questions. Councillor Andrews.
Chair, first of all, I use Premier Inn, so should I declare an interest? yes. But my serious question is why have they come to this location and not to Eden Road in Malton? Do officers have any idea about this?
I don't have the answer to that. I'm sorry.
Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'd like to refer to page 143 in the design and access statement about sustainability, etc. And halfway down it says the development aims towards a 0% additional runoff target in regard to surface water drainage. Now, if I translate that as it says there, it means that everything that runs off the site now will do so after the development, only it'll run off much faster due to all the impermeable materials. So I'm not... Is that meant to say something else?
It's not intending to have any more runoff than would occur if it was left undeveloped as a greenfield, as agricultural runoff rate. We might be improving on that, actually, by the time we've got the lead local flood authority's comments, but I think that's what that's saying.
Do members have any other questions? No. On that basis, I will open it up to the floor for debate, and I think, Councillor Potter, this is your area.
Well, I'd like to say I've got no comments, but you won't believe me. Yes, thank you, Chair. Right, there are a few pros and cons with this one. This has previously been a difficult site with one or two attempts to develop it, but being as it's in that area between the industrial site and residential, it always was a problem. It's always had poor drainage. So I see this development as being the ideal use, simply because you've more or less got an 8-to-5 use on the industrial estate and an overnight accommodation use for this proposal. So therefore it rather complements the site, both in terms of the light industrial and the industrial on one side and the residential on the other. It is, in my view, going to be a different market to most of the existing accommodation providers locally, simply on the basis of what it is. And I am aware of Port Madoc, which had great concerns about whether this would impact on the B&Bs, the accommodation providers, being a very similar sized town to Pickering, and with a nice little railway as well. And it's actually increased the number of visitors to the town. So that's obviously a positive. The report describes the building as a modern contemporary design. I prefer to call it a dull, unimaginative, identikit design. But I don't see that as a big problem given the location, because I don't think there's anything too outstanding architecturally on the industrial estate, so not a problem there. I do have some slight concerns about the drainage of the site, simply on the basis that in heavy rainfall conditions there's quite a considerable amount of water that comes down down from opposite. There's quite a significant flow because of the development up to one side and the open fields to the other. So, although I'm aware that we've not quite tied it down in terms of drainage from the LLFA, I'd be rather disappointed if there wasn't any form of suds on the site, as the water is clearly draining through. And that is, while appreciating that there is very little room for any suds in there, but limited space, but certainly at the front, a few little berms and swales to complement the pond that's already in there. Whether that's going to happen, I've no idea. It always concerns me that we've got impermeable parking areas. Is this really necessary? Because, you know, these are buildings for the next 50 years plus, and surely it's about time we were planning to future-proof these things in terms of flood risk as well as climate change. I can't help but note that the roof of both the main building and the industrial site are particularly appropriate for solar panels, albeit the western facing, but it's a very slight slope. particularly the industrial units. So, in conclusion and on balance, I'm quite happy to approve or propose approval of acceptance, but, and I'd like you to turn to page 100, because I'd like to propose an additional condition. Now, I'm aware, both from what the applicant or the agent had to say about this 35% improvement in building regulations. Now, I'm aware that Premier Inn, Whitbread, whoever you want to call them, actually employ expert consultants to maximise their energy efficiency, which is excellent. In terms of climate change, in terms of energy supplies, because this is a major employer, builder, whatever, company throughout the country. But it's also worth noting that they're making significant savings of money. And I'm led to believe that in terms of what they've saved from their consultants, it's in the millions of pounds in savings from this energy efficiency. So I'd like to propose that both of the buildings on the site incorporate renewable energy and energy conservation to achieve a minimum of 35% improvement in building regulations in terms of energy usage and conservation. And that's based on what the applicant has already confirmed, what the agent has said, and it's just making sure that they deliver on what they've promised. Thank you, Chair.
Councillor Potter, we believe that it's covered in condition 10.
Perhaps if that could just be reworded, because all that is saying is prior to the works, they want a specification detailing how it's going to be improved. But I'd like that condition to say that it will deliver a minimum of 35% improvement and involving both of the buildings, rather than if one of them is particularly high and the other one is rather low, in case there's any selling off of the buildings.
I think, as you'd probably appreciate, we've already discussed at some length the conditions with the developer, but I think our intention was that this condition would relate to the development. See what I mean? So we'd take it over the development as a whole, and I suppose there is an issue that the buildings could be built out at different phases, so there's potentially an issue there that the industrial units might be after the hotel, perhaps. But I think we were looking at that on the basis that if the hotel overperformed, we wouldn't necessarily penalise the industrial units.
I don't see it as penalising anybody.
Well,
this is providing a benefit for the future.
I think the issue here is Premier Inn won't be using the... Well, we don't think Premier Inn will be using the industrial units, so their company commitment is to the main building, but actually the way this condition is worded is they're applying that to the whole development. So I think we've got what we think we need, but... I mean, if you think the wording needs to be different, then that's maybe something members need to consider tonight.
Well, certainly, I don't know that condition 10 quite lives up to what I would expect. And I feel sure that with the commitment this company have got, that they will live up to that, but I want to make sure that there is a minimum of 35% improvement for the whole shooting match.
So we would have to have that discussion with the developer, see whether that's a feasible option for us. I mean, we were taking it on the in the context of the entire development. That's the way the discussions and negotiations have gone so far. So maybe you, if that's your issue, Chairman, you could perhaps delegate that discussion or negotiation.
Are you happy for me to then delegate this to the officers to sort that bit out?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's okay.
Thank you, Councillor Potter. Councillor Mason, please.
I think my would like to echo Mike's point was really that just to ensure the businesses that take up the industrial units get the benefits of the savings as well as the hotel would. I think that's the point you're trying to make, isn't it? Yeah. So I think I'd have to echo that, but you've delegated it now anyway, so.
Councillor Frank.
I agree with Councillor Potter on the design of this building. Looking at this picture, I could only say that it's mediocre at the best. It's on the edge of a really nice little market town, Pickering, and all right, it's next to an industrial estate, but it isn't part of an industrial estate as such. It's a big building, and it's going to be, if not prominent in the landscape, it will be seen in the landscape. And I do think we could ask for a better design. I think we could improve on this 100%. I think this design is very poor. I would like to see it go back to the drawing board and see something much nicer for the edge of the for the edge of a market town. I don't think it's a suitable design at all.
Councillor Andrews.
Chair, I would support the local member. My only complaint is that why hasn't this been delivered to the Eden Road site at Malton? Because it's an absolutely perfect site for that, and nearer, and as it's between Pickering and Malton, it would have delivered more visitors to both towns. But there we are, and I would support the application.
Councillor Andrews, can I ask you, when you say you support the application, are you seconding Councillor Potter's approval. I
will second Councillor Potter if nobody else has done so.
Thank you very much, Councillor Andrews. I take on board your comments, but I don't think it's within our gift to answer your question. Do members, any other members have anything to say? Right, on that basis, it has been moved and seconded for approval with delegation to the Chief Planning Officer to sort out condition 10, and I would ask members to please move to the vote.
Chair, is there any way we can ask for a better design than this? This is pretty appalling design. Is there any way that our planning officer can ask for something better than this?
Answer this really, as she was involved in the negotiation, but in essence we had something which was very challenging. There were some criticisms of I think somebody used the words prison block, which I think was a little unfair, but it was very massive, hugely residential in appearance. And what we've ended up with, something which follows some of the more interesting designs that this company has come up with in terms of monopitch designs around the country. It's difficult to draw a big building that looks interesting. I've struggled with it over 35 years of doing planning. What we try to do here is actually echo a sort of a vaguely industrial design by the monopitch roof, an introduction of zinc type colours on the roof, but actually introduce some vertical lines into the building with the panels that you can see there. Which actually have also got, will have some shadow linings on them to make it more vertical, because it's quite a horizontal expanse of building, and they've achieved that by lining the windows, using more panelling and using render panels as well. So they've actually introduced something to break up the mass and the bulk of the building, which previously wasn't there. It was just like one massive expanse. So I understand your concern. I wish we'd have put the original drawings in the pack and saying this is what we started with, because I think you'd think, crikey, you've said 100% better, but what we've got here is 100% better than what we had. So it's a question of horses for courses, but if we weren't happy with this, we wouldn't recommend it to you.
Councillor Cleary did indicate earlier, so can I go to Councillor Cleary first?
It's only a response to the question, so it might be appropriate. It's only very brief, but while not defending any architectural merit, it does say in the papers that the design is particularly energy efficient in the way it's built and the use of the materials. So that's one advantage, but certainly visually it's not. Thank you.
Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's just for clarification on what we're voting on. I think in addition to beefing up condition 10, it's subject to the receipt of a good LLFA report as well, isn't it? Yeah.
I can confirm that, Councillor Cleary. So it's been moved and seconded for approval. Can I ask members now to make the vote? Sorry, members, that's 9 votes for and 1 against. It is carried subject to the clarification of condition 10 and the Lee Local Flood Authority comments. Members, moving on to item 9 on the agenda, which is the erection of a glass house, 9,500 square metres, at Oldby Field Nurseries, and that's Sandhutton to Bossall Road, Sandhutton. And I think, you doing this, Gary? Thank you.
I wonder when I can find the item.
Page 152.
Thank you, Chairman. This application is a major application, as you can imagine, with a floor area of that size. But actually, this is an additional glass house on the site of an existing complex of a number of glass houses, Chairman, and located at Oldby Field Farm, just outside of Sandhutton. The area is 9,504, very precise, Chairman, square metres. Somebody was out with a calculator there for the extra 4 square metres. As you can see from the location plan on page 156, this is located immediately adjacent to an existing substantial glass farm with glass houses on it, which, aside from one or two locations, Chairman, I would suggest is probably one of the best screen sites in part of southern Rydale. So I've got some photographs to show you in a moment. You'll note from the committee report that actually the reason for the requirement for the glass house is because of loss of an existing glass house accommodation elsewhere, which is off-site, and actually there's a net gain because it's involving less toing and froings of vehicles between the two sites. So it's actually a bit of a win-win in that sense, Chairman. But if I quickly just go to the photographs, and so here we are. This is, just to orient yourself, this is just the edge of Sandhutton, just in this corner here, and this is the lane heading off towards the Claxton direction. And the access to the site is down this track here, and this is why it's so well screened. It's set some considerable distance back from the road. So you get an idea of the amount of accommodation that's already on the site, and this glass house would sit in this area here. So hopefully that gives you an indication of where the site sits in relation to the surrounding settlements. So these are the lanes, well, this is studying at the access point into the farm, and these are the lanes, the views of the lanes in either direction. So that's the direction heading back towards towards Sandhutton. This is a view down the track, and this tree belt here, the farm complex is completely behind that, so you just can't see it from any public vantage point. And here, as you approach nearer to the complex, as you down the track, you just catch a glimpse of the existing glass houses. So you're some way down the track, I would say probably a couple of hundred yards at this point, something. So this is looking back down that track, and again, you can see how well this is screened with blocks of woodland planting. This is the existing farmhouse and group of farm buildings, the glass houses. It gives you an indication of how big these are. I mean, they're not tall buildings, but they cover a very large area of ground. And this is where the new glass house would sit. Gives you just panning round, so you've got the overhead lines there just as a focal point, so the glass house would sit in here. But again, you get an impression of this is quite a flat area of landscape, and you've got well established blocks of woodland planting and hedgerows, which actually are quite an effective screen from any public vantage points. Nothing else to add really, Chairman. I mean, it's on the committee because it's a major application. There have been no adverse comments. I do believe we do have a speaker registered, Mr. Ayres.
Good evening. If you'd like to press the button at the bottom to engage the microphone, you've got 3 minutes. I will give you a prompt at the last 30 seconds.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you again for the opportunity to speak on behalf of the applicant and in support of the application at Oldbeyfield Nurseries. There are a number of reasons which give rise to the need for the glasshouse, with the main points being due to the loss of glasshouse space at Wilberforce, which has already been pointed out, which was previously rented, and also due to a growing customer base and increased demand for bedding plants. In brief, the nursery has been established for in excess of 25 years, and is supported by a wide and diverse customer base, which includes local authorities, including York, Doncaster, Lincoln and Hull, prestigious stately homes, including Harewood House and Castle Howard, retail stores such as B&M Bargains, as well as local independent garden centres. In June 2019, a tenancy of the rented site based at Wilberforce was terminated. In order to sustain the current levels of production, additional glasshouse space is required, which can be created at Oldbeyfield Farm. By constructing the glasshouse at Oldbeyfield Farm, this brings wider benefits, and mainly to the movement of HGV traffic resulting from the plants formerly being moved to Wilberforce and back again. Most of the bedding plants sold by the applicant are established at Oldbeyfield Farm, with a large proportion of them then transported off-site and up until recently to Wilberforce to be nurtured, and then transported back to Oldbeyfield Farm when fully grown to be packaged and redistributed to customers. The proposed glasshouse at Oldbeyfield Farm will negate the need to move stock on and off the holding prior to being sold, which will therefore reduce traffic movements in and around local villages. The applicant has sought alternative glasshouse accommodation, but there is none available. Without the construction of the additional glasshouse space at Oldbeyfield Farm, the business will not be able to sustain its existing and growing client base. Therefore, the proposed development is paramount to the sustainability and continuance of the existing business. I hope that gives you an insight into the requirement of the development, which is necessary, as said, for the existence of the business, and which brings obvious wider benefits. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. I'll open it up for questions to members. Councillor Hope.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. I presume the staff from the Wilberforce unit will be moved onto the Oldbeyfield one, or is this going to be an increase in staffing?
My understanding was that the staff went back with support as well. Well, I mean, clearly the business, in the report it talks about the business being operational for 25 years, employs 20 full-time, 60 part-time members of staff. I guess there's some seasonality to that. This is a bigger glass house, so one might assume that it's reasonable to get more throughput. So one would hope that the business will be hopefully expanding as part of that. But I don't have any particular details as to where the part-time workers live or reside.
Thank you.
If there are no other questions, I'll open it up for debate. The local member is me. Mr. and Mrs. Coulter have been there some significant time, and I'm familiar with their operation. I think it's a plus, certainly for the local villages, that won't have the traffic going backwards and forwards through from Wilberforce back to Sandhutton and the movement of the workers. I do know that the Coulters purchased Kisthorn Farm, which was just outside Claxton, and I think a lot of the workers are actually housed at Kisthorn Farm. And you can't see this from any vantage point. There are no vantage points where you can see this complex of buildings. So I'm happy to propose it, and I'll leave it open to my other members. Councillor Hope.
Thank you, Joan. Yeah, it's nice to see a business in Rydale going and moving like this one is. I remember it years back when they first started, and very small greenhouses, but as Gary said, this is a massive, humongous, I think is the word. But I would like to second your proposal, Chairman.
Councillor Cleary, did you indicate?
I did. Councillor Hope beat me to it. Very briefly, I've known the, I don't know this farm, but I know the farm immediately north and to the northwest for over 50 years, and it's only recently I knew that this existed. It is all but invisible until you get upon it, so I'm very happy to support. And it is, again, to repeat myself, it's an investment in the land-based economy.
Okay. No other comments? Thank you, members. It's been moved and seconded for approval. If we could go to the vote, that would be kind. Thank you. Thank you, members. That's unanimous. We can move on to item 10 on the agenda, members, on page 167. It's an application for the erection of a four-bedroom detached dormer bungalow to include an integral studio annex, an erection of a detached carport and formation of vehicular access and landscaping. And that's Main Street, that's land off Pasture House, Main Street, Norham Bay, Kirby Moorside. This is yours? Oh, no, sorry, it's Neve. Thank you, Neve.
Thank you, Chair. The application site is a partly wooded parcel of land directly to the south of Pasture House in Normanby. And as has been mentioned, this application seeks approval for the erection of a detached dormer bungalow to include an integral annex, a detached carport, and the formation of a new vehicle access taken from Main Street. I just need to update you in that we've received one late representation raising concerns in relation to the position of the dwelling, a small section of which is outside development boundaries has been fully detailed in the officer's report. It also raises concerns in relation to materials and protected trees. These will all be addressed within the report, but these are not relating to any new aspects that haven't been previously raised. So the principle of the development has been fully considered within the officer's report. This is a dwelling for an identified local need with a compelling rationale behind it. The annex aspect accords with local policy in terms of it having a very strong relationship with the main dwelling, and as has been mentioned, a very small section of the proposed footprint of the dwelling would be outside development limits. Evidence was put forward in the design and access statement that provided a justification for that. It is helping to maintain the existing significant wooded parcel of land to the front that has the benefit of improving the or retaining the excellent landscaping from the main street and having a positive contribution to the street scene. The precise site was also identified in terms of the protected great crested newts that have been found on site, and that was also detailed in the report. And the dwelling will be located in this element here, in this area here, which is about 27 metres away from the main street. And within Normanby, there's a very strong linear pattern on the western side of the road, but on the eastern side, as you can quite clearly see, dwellings are located much further inset from the road. So this maintains the prevalent block pattern of the village, and we've got no concerns in relation to the siting. In relation to the new dwelling, the proposal is to be constructed under a passive house ethos with a low carbon, low energy approach, and will incorporate integrated solar panels within the roof slopes to the south. In our view, I think it relates to a high quality design. It incorporates the use of Yorkshire stone. I think there has been perhaps some misunderstanding in some of the representations received in terms of the wording of the blackened Yorkshire stone, but what I've seen in the design and access statement is very clearly the light Yorkshire stone that is found throughout the district. Also, the development will incorporate pan tiles, which is again traditionally part of the character of Rydale. So in terms of the proposed design, I've got no significant concerns. The carport will be of a very limited scale, and it will be located just to the south of the dwelling. There will be very little visibility of that from the main street itself, and it's very functional and kind of appropriately scaled in comparison to the main dwelling. In terms of neighbouring amenity, improvements have been made to the design of the scheme, which in our view is adequately secured the amenity of the neighbouring residential properties. This property here is Seven Lodge to the north, and that will be located approximately 46 metres away from the dwelling. So that's such a significant distance. We've got no concerns about any overlooking from that northwards from the building proposed. To the south, there are two dwellings in closer vicinity to the proposed development, but consideration has been given, and the only openings along the southern elevation are at ground floor level only. And whenever I go through the photographs, you'll see the significant landscaping that, even when not in leaf, provides a kind of visual break between the properties that are currently existing and the development as proposed. It's also considered that the existing pasture house and the proposed new development wouldn't result in any harm of the amenity of any kind of future residents of either property. We have requested a condition in terms of just identifying the proposed boundary treatments as well, but by virtue of their positioning, we don't think that there would be any significant impacts. You will have noted on the plans there is a balcony proposed to the eastern elevation of the dwelling. This has also been subject to some negotiations, where a 1.8 metre high privacy screen has been erected, or it will be erected if approved, on the southern side of that balcony, and that will prevent any first floor level elevated views from the proposed building to either of the two properties to the south here. That would be secured by planning condition to be retained for the lifetime of the development as well. So I'll just run through some of the photographs. This is the existing property, pasture house. And here you can see where the proposed access will be. I would note that North Yorkshire Highways have no objections in relation to the proposal, and you will have seen there's the heavily wooded area to the west of the site will be where the location of the new access route running along approximately there. A tree survey has been submitted in support of this application, and it identifies that these trees in this location are of a Grade C classification. However, consideration has been given to this, and the portion of the drive which will be taken through the younger Grade C trees will also be protected via gravel and hardcore membrane. As detailed in the officer's report, further protection has been afforded to the trees to the south of the site. Within that, there are two protected trees actually falling within the boundary of the adjoining property. However, because of the proposed driveway and the proposed carport, consideration has been given to their protection throughout the build process and also with the formal laying of the access in that area. So there will be a specific geogrid membrane around the trees and the protected trees to the south of the dwelling, as indicated in the proposed plans. We have conditioned further details to be submitted of the no-dig carport technology, and there will be further protection afforded to the trees in terms of root protection areas and protective fencing associated with that. These proposals were considered acceptable by a tree officer as well. So this was obviously taken in winter, and this is looking westwards towards Main Street. This is looking towards Pasture House and Main Street, and you can see even in winter the significant landscaping afforded by the younger trees to the west of the site. This is looking towards the east of the site, and you can see some of the trees along the southern boundary there. This is looking towards the neighbouring properties to the south, which are Fellbridge and High Gables. And I think you appreciate, certainly for the openings that are going to be only at ground floor level, that even in the depths of winter, there is still a lot of kind of trees and landscaping in between that provide a visual break and will afford the privacy to both properties if this is approved. And this is what is referenced in the report. This is the kind of drainage ditch that appears dry at the moment, which I think has an effect on the root protection area. It may make it slightly less sensitive than we could otherwise expect, but nonetheless, the significant tree protection measures are there, so we think it is suitably protected by the imposition of those via planning condition. So this is looking towards the property of Seven Lodge, which is the one that I'd noted is to the north and is located about 46 metres away from the nearest part of the proposed dwelling, which, as we've indicated, is particularly significant and would limit any harmful loss of privacy to that property. And that's looking back towards Pasture House, so you get an appreciation of the positioning of that and how privacy can be afforded for each of the properties. You'll also have been able to tell from the proposed location plan, the proposed block plan, the significant size of the site and how we feel it can be suitably subdivided as infill development with significant amenity space retained for both. The aspects in terms of the protected newts have been detailed in significant detail in the officer's report, so I won't repeat those, but we have been satisfied that we do have very significant and appropriate protection that will be afforded through the application of the conditions, and one of those is requesting the Natural England licence or confirmation from Natural England that the licence isn't required, as well as a biodiversity method statement. So I think that is going to afford the necessary protection to the protected species. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Niamh. We do have a speaker this evening on this matter. Mr. Dowell, would you like to come to the seat, Mr. Dowell? And it's the large button at the bottom to put the microphone on. You have 3 minutes at the 30 seconds from the end. I'll give you an audible indication.
Okay. Hello. My wife and I have lived in the village of Normanby for 38 years and wish to remain part of this community as we grow older. Our new energy-efficient bungalow has been designed as a lifetime home for us by award-winning Buckrose Ecological Architects, aiming for economy, carbon saving and comfort. It will be as close as possible to the Passive House low energy building standard, one of the highest in the world. We consulted with several neighbours before submitting plans. We have also addressed and modified the plans for all objections considered relevant by the planning officer. We believe that the final version conforms with planning policies in the Rydale local plan strategy and national planning policy framework. The planning officer states that the bungalow will be a high quality new build design that will form a sustainable new dwelling. We are aware of the conditions attached to the approval of this application, which we are happy to accept and implement. We will move out of Pasture House, freeing up a family home in the village. We've spent almost 5 years thought, research and work towards this point, and we look forward to receiving your support. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I'll open it up for questions from members. Sir Andrews.
Was the applicant happy with the local occupancy condition, or did he feel he had to accept it because it was council policy?
I didn't have that particular conversation, but I know they are resident in the village and have been for a long number of years, as indicated. And they have stated they were happy to accept the condition, so I feel satisfied that they were happy with it in this case.
Any other questions? I'll open it up for debate. Unfortunately, I don't think we have a local member on this one, because I think it's Councillor Clark's ward. So, or do you think it's still? Mike, do you want to take this?
Yeah, quite happy to do that. Thank you, Chair. I was just thinking, I've seen quite a lot of black Yorkshire sandstone in my time. And that at sort of age, but it was all soot and industrial grime, and thankfully we've moved on from those days. I see this as a very thoughtful proposal. It has minimal impact on the neighbours, significant screening, I'm pleased to see sensible protection for the existing trees, and certainly no loss of the trees. I know that it's very well screened, because I just went past it this evening and had a look. It goes without saying that I approve of the energy-efficient construction, so I am very happy to move approval. Thank you.
Anybody else? Councillor Mason.
Yeah, obviously, I think you're aware that I'll be quite supportive of this one as well. I think we should be encouraged by applications like this. It just confirms the growing appetite of residents willing to do their bit to tackle climate change in this area. The application is a real good attempt to put the solutions in place to deal with the climate emergency, and I'm sure we all know what that means. I think they've gone the extra mile as well with the environmental impacts and building methods and low carbon technology. And I particularly like the attempt to protect the tree roots in the carport construction. I'm glad you've recommended approval of this, and I will second Mike's movement to approve this, and I hope we can encourage more developments like this in the future.
Thank you. Any other members? Councillor Cleary.
Just very brief. I'm very happy to support it. I just wonder whether whether Councillor Potter would like the conditions beefing up to make sure it's built as specified. I'm pleased. I just thought I'd give you the chance just to have a look at it.
Members, it's been moved and seconded for approval. Could we please go to the vote? Thank you, members. That's unanimous. Right, members, item 11 is an application for the erection of a timber fence in the rear garden. It is retrospective at 61 Eastgate, Pickering.
Thank you, Chairman, and the observant amongst you will see that item 12 is the listed building application for this, for exactly the same thing. The reason that this application is before you is that, as you can see from the from the description, it's a retrospective application, and it did come to us via a complaint, so it's an enforcement case. But in essence, the complaint led to the submission of the application, which then the complainant then continued to object to the planning application and the listed building application. Before I just show you the photographs, I think it would help if I sort of tried to explain the circumstances, because I had to go out on site myself to look at this one to fully understand it. So I hope I've taken a couple of extra photographs which show the context. But as you can see on page 210, this property is located to the northern side of Eastgate, on the Thornton Road side of the town, sort of going out from the roundabout. It's one of a run of stone properties, and this particular property has its access round the back. So if you look at that, you can see that the access onto Eastgate, you go up this sort of unsurfaced driveway round to the back of the premises, back of the plot, to actually see it. So it's quite an unusual arrangement, and that goes behind the back of the two neighbouring properties that are located to the west. So I hope that explains the red line to you. It's a sort of disjointed access arrangement, and there are some outbuildings located to the rear also in the same ownership. And if you then just move slightly onto page 211, you can get an indication of the property, which has been extended, and it had permission back in 2013 for a part two-storey, part single-storey rear extension, which were approved. And what we also have, which the drawing on page 211 shows, is a section of fence. And it's that section of fence that is the bit that didn't have permission back in 2013, Chairman. I think, as with a lot of these developments, you get behind the backs of properties in conservation areas in old medieval towns, and there isn't such thing as a 90-degree boundary. And what was left here was about a 4-inch gap that was at a slight angle between the approved plan of the extension and the boundary wall as it was at that time. Just to make matters completely awkward, the ground levels at number 60 are higher than they are at number 61. So what we were left with was an awkward little air gap, which was also partly on a retaining structure. So to reinstate that boundary, protect it, create an air gap and do what's been done, we ended up with the applicant constructing the fence, which, because it's a listed building, needs planning permission. If it wasn't for that, it wouldn't have needed planning permission or listed building consent, of course. It is, as you can see from the drawing, located immediately to the back and to the rear of the property, and there are no public views of this fence, but obviously it's apparent to the neighbour, and hence we have the concern. What I'd like to do, having explained that as best I can, and if you can picture that west elevation in your mind's eye, what I've done is just taken some photographs today from slightly further back. So if you're standing immediately at the back of the rear extension, which is the single-storey bit, and there's a little two-storey section here, you're looking at the fence, and it's behind there. So these hedging and plants here are the neighbour's side of the fence, and the fence is behind that building. So you can't see it from even within its own curtilage. As you can imagine, the public view, the other side of the east gate is the other side, is around the back, the front of the property. This is a view taken from the driveway that goes round to the back of the property. So this is number 60, 59, and this is number 61. And again, you can't see the fence from this position because of the boundary and fences and hedges of the adjacent properties. So the fence is behind that line of washing, in effect. I had to take those photographs because otherwise you won't be able to then contextualise the more detailed ones. So I'm now going to go back to the front, the first photographs. And this is a view taken from the neighbouring property. So to orient yourself on this, you need to go back to your west elevation on your on the agenda papers. And you see this is where the step in the line of the boundary is. This extension now has its roof on. And this is where the fence meets the wall, which continues up and away from the property in the back garden. And that's looking down from the fence towards the gutter of the extension. So this is the gap that the fence denotes and protects. So this is looking, somebody must have been stood on the roof to take this photograph, because it's the only way you can see it. And you can just see that this is an awkward, narrow gap. What you can't really see is the fact that this ground level here is higher than this one. So that's the line of the fence which restores the boundary. And that's taken from the neighbour's property on a slightly higher side looking down. So again, to orient yourself on the drawing, this is where the change in levels occurs. And it's here. So you can see at this point in time when this photo was taken, the roof wasn't on. And that's looking from higher up the roof, looking down on the fence with the roof in place and stepping up to the wall. As you can see, the back garden of the other side of the property is also fenced with hedging that's quite high. So I hope that sort of gives you an idea of that's now what you're looking at, stepping back from the extension. So you can't see the fence at the moment from here. It is what it is, Chairman. I think in terms of the public interest, we've got very little impact there, but I hope the photographs have tried to explain to you what the issues are. It's one that our conservation officer has identified some harm by the loss of the wall, but you know, obviously we've also got the extension, and the fence I think is reasonably well detailed. It's relatively modest, and in those circumstances we recommend approval, Chairman.
Thank you very much. Questions for a minute? Councillor Hope.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. It might be I'll put a question for you, Gary, but what height is the fence?
I think it depends which side you measure it from. I can scale off from a plan if I've got one here. As drawn from the neighbouring side from ground floor, we're scaling at this is to the lower section. I'm just giving you this drawing now. It's about 1.4 metres, and it steps up to, as scaled, about 1.7.
So the permitted height is...
Well, not if it wasn't for the fact that it was a listed building, the permitted height would be 2 metres, but to erect any means of enclosure on the curtilage of a listed building needs planning permission. So it's just one of those parts of the GDO that doesn't apply to listed buildings without needing planning permission.
Councillor Riby.
Could you tell me, was it essential to put the fence there to protect the wall, or is it protecting the boundary? Because I could kind of sympathise with the neighbour looking at... It will mellow down, I understand, but right, the impact of the new fence... It's merely protecting the boundary, I assume, but there's a wall there, not very far behind the fence. So if you left it unprotected, the wall,
Well, I think the view of the applicant was that this would prevent the difference in levels resulting in things like soil encroachment into the gap,
yeah,
creating damp problems, those sorts of things. So I think it was more around keeping the separation there and it keeping it dry, mm-hmm, as much as anything else. I mean, clearly there's guttering to the extension and things like that that are caught, but you know probably as well as I do that if you've got ground doing this, then water will,
yeah, I understand,
do this.
That.
So I think that was the intention, that it would stabilise things so that that doesn't happen. And we do get these cheap by jowl relationships all over our town centres whereby, you know, ad hoc solutions are put in place. As the fences go, I think it's quite a tidy fence. It does have that slight yellow tinge to it that tannelised timber does have when you first put it up. That will silver down in time, you know, to that sort of greyish colour, which is probably more in keeping with the stone walls that it sits with.
I'm quite happy.
Councillor Frank.
Can I ask, was there a wall there to start with? Has that wall been removed? Has it been pulled down so that they can build this extension?
There was a wall there before the extension was built, but the approved extension didn't provide for the keeping of the wall, so we ended up with a slightly off-kilter, it shows square there, but I don't think it is quite square, where you've got a wall of an extension quite hard to the boundary. The wall, if you look at page 61, the wall that's shown, identified there, continued the wall came down. The wall was like a typical stone wall. It's got that thickness. I think I had a photograph there somewhere. Not a good one. There, look. So the wall was this thickness. Yeah? So that continues off into the back garden. So that's what's drawn on page 61.
Can I ask then? When planning permission was given for this extension, should that wall not have had a preservation order on it? As this is a listed building, should that wall not have been listed?
It was always listed, but it also had listed building consent and planning permission to build the extension that was granted. And I don't think whether it was the intention that the wall was going to form the boundary, but it doesn't. And it's left us with this awkward gap. But there's no space now left to rebuild the wall. There's no space now left to rebuild that wall in that position.
But then shouldn't that have been sorted out when planning permission was given to the original, to the extension? Shouldn't there have been a gap left and the extension being fixed?
I suspect that might have been the case, but that's not where we are. We're dealing with a retrospective position where there's an extension built now. There's a section of wall that's been removed that wasn't covered by the listed building consent. We've now got a fence, and it's whether we approve the fence or not.
Councillor Cleary.
I just like to follow on from my colleagues. Councillor Frank's quite right. I think what we're looking at here is the removal of the wall, not the erection of a fence. And I understand what the application is for, but should we not be more concerned about the removal of that wall?
I think the answer to that is that your conservation officer has assessed the fence as being as a replacement for the wall, given the context of what we've got with the extension that's built. And she's saying that she doesn't think the harm of that loss of that small section of wall is sufficient to withhold consent for the retention of the fence. You have to remember that we still have to plan in the public interest on all of these situations, and I think this is a listed building, which is why the fence needs planning permission. There is an issue that we granted planning permission for something which, since it's been carried out, rightly or wrongly, a section of that wall has been demolished, and the remedy to that has been the proposed fence. So if we grant permission for the fence, that's the end of this situation. If members refuse this fence, we might have to think, well, is there something that we need to do in respect of the wall? I think it would be very difficult because I don't see how we could rebuild the wall as it was, but it's where we are currently.
Yeah. Can I just come back to that? I mean, I'm trying to think logically as to how the fence was built, and I think looking at the report, some of the photographs in the report, the fence was built before the extension was put up.
Some of it was contemporaneous. I think they'd got the posts in as they were building the extension, by the look of it. I mean, I wasn't
My reason for suggesting that is it'd be all nigh impossible, other than with the consent and agreement of the neighbour, to put it up in the first place. And in future, it will be necessary to have the consent of the neighbour to maintain it.
But that's always the case with any boundary or any, be it a wall or a fence or anything.
I realise that's not necessarily a planning matter for the maintenance, but if we're concerned about the replacement of a wall that seems to have disappeared, and if, suppose, at some point in the future somebody was minded for whatever reason to replace the wall, again, that would have to be done with the consent and agreement of the neighbour. I don't think... I can't see why it's an impossibility to replace the wall.
I can't really comment on the relationship between the neighbours. I suspect that might be part of it, but the situation is that obviously there are many things that control development in relation to boundaries. We've got property law, we've got the Party Wall Act issue. We've also got planning permission, listed building consent in this case. We can only deal with the planning permission and the listed building consent merits of this application, which is after the work's been done. So you're in a position of having to decide what decision should be made now the work has been done. And without going back to the whole thing about expediency, you know, we have to decide whether or not it's expedient to not grant permission, and then if we're in that situation, whether or not there are any arising enforcement matters. It's a judgment call, but our building conservation officer has to make these judgments on a daily basis in terms of, you know, what are, to a lot of people, fairly minor works to the backs of listed buildings. In this case, there is some harm, which is identified in the report, but the issue here is that the conservation officer has looked at this and considers that the harm is slight, and there are no wider public perception issues of this, so we're... In terms of planning in the public interest, it's very difficult to not arrive at another recommendation of approval, Chairman. So that's where we are.
Councillor Frank.
I can't believe that you can leave something as poor as that on a listed building. What is the point in having listed building and to maintain a listed building? The whole thing's listed, the walls, the fencing, everything's listed. It's listed for a reason. It's listed to keep it as is, or as it should be. And from looking at that last picture that you had before, I would have said you could have rebuilt a wall rather than the fence and still left a gap. It doesn't have to be a 2-foot wall, but it could be a suitable wall that fits in with the rest of the wall, because it looks as though the wall's just been knocked down willy-nilly to me on a listed building, and I don't think that's right. I can't approve of that.
I think all the time, Chairman, we end up in terms of making judgment calls on works that, in this case, the work's been done. The context of this site is that if you look at this site, you've got no outer public view of this. Yes, it's close to the building. You can see the section of wall that then remains. At the back of the other buildings, if there were any walls, they've long gone. They're now fences. And so you have to take into account the context in making your judgment on whether or not it's right or wrong to take a section of wall away. Undoubtedly, the wall was attached to the building, so therefore it is listed because it's physically attached to the building. The conservation officer has looked at this and looked at it in the context of what is a small cottage with a burgage plot, and concluded that this small section of wall is not one that she wants to take the battle on with. Now, I can contrast that with an ongoing enforcement case in Wheelgate in Moulton, where we lost 50-odd metres of wall, and we took action, and we're still taking action. but it was, you know, it's choosing your battles is really what it is, because, you know, every time we take on a case like this, if it's appealed, you know, that's where we are, and we have to pick our arguments.
Can I just say then, in the future, this committee needs to look very, very carefully at listed buildings before they give planning permission, because that planning permission was given without any thought of whether it would be too near to the wall or not, or whether the wall would get knocked down or whatever. So that when the planning permission was given, there should have been more care taken to the listing and to the listed building.
I don't disagree with your analysis, Councillor Frank. It's just where we are, where we are, and we find ourselves in an invidious position of saying to ourselves, is there something we should take action on here? And on balance, the council's building conservation officer is saying, look, we need to choose our cases. Not everybody's happy with it. That's why it's before you tonight. But we're having to give you a lead and a recommendation.
Right. Can I just clarify, members? We are in questions. If you finish with questions, I'll move into debate. Is it a question or is it debate? Councillor Ryby.
Could you tell me the wall that was taken down? I assume it was a stone or an old wall. The new wall, could you tell me, is that a replica of the old wall, or is it kind of just concrete block and they put the fence in there to hide the concrete block?
Sorry. Can you see where that roof goes back? It's very difficult to take photographs of this because of the levels, but if you see where that roof goes back and it then steps back in, that forms part of the house.
Yeah.
And this, it's roughly the line of where the wall was. There is now no wall save for down to the ground level of the neighbouring property.
I understand that.
So you've got a fence in that area.
Yeah.
That's it.
But what I'm asking is the wall that was there, was it traditional, like we see on those houses there, stone wall? And if that's the case, the new wall that's behind the fence, is that a stone wall or is it not a stone wall?
Of the extension.
Of the extension.
Of the extension. The extension here is...
block wall.
Done something here. Sorry, Jim. I haven't actually got a picture of that.
I just wondered whether the fence was hiding some shoddy work.
No, I can't give you a picture of that. Yeah, I don't know whether that will show you, but you can see that the extension, the property here is stone and pantile.
Yeah.
The two-story bit is a decent red brick, and then you've got a stone single-story section here. I'm not sure whether I'll be able to give you a photo down the side. You can't really see. You can't really see.
No, you can't tell. Because I don't accept that you're protecting the 18 inches of soil because of the level difference. I don't accept that as a good reason for putting a fence up. I don't have really a problem with protecting your boundary, but I just wonder whether a conservation area wall has been removed and a block wall has been put up and then covered up with a fence. That's what I'm asking.
From ground, this is fence. There's no wall above ground.
So the extension must have an outer wall.
No, I meant where this is sitting now.
Yeah, where the fence is sitting. But I don't think you understand what I'm saying. There was a wall that was removed.
Yeah.
And that was replaced with a new wall, 18 inches or whatever the distance. Exactly. So is the extension built in the same kind of material as the wall that was taken down?
I can't answer that because I couldn't see it today.
Because to me that makes a difference about my attitude about the fence. Because if it's built in stone and looks like the original wall, well, it doesn't matter a toss to my mind whether the fence is there or not. But if the fence is covering a block concrete wall, then we're in a problem. We have a real problem.
I don't think I can answer that
question because I couldn't get to see behind the fence and below the gutter of that. And I'm not sure, as I've got the drawing back in 13.
position of the guy that put the fence up, if I was trying to cheapen the project and I was taking the stone wall down, put a fence up, nobody can see it, well, that solves the problem and make it cheap. Otherwise, why put
All I've got here is an extract of a plan from 2013, which is at the looking at it from the neighbour's side, which is showing what I would take to be stone walling. But I can't tell you what's on site because I couldn't see behind that fence to see what the wall actually is.
I commend the builder for doing it as it was in that case. And
the approved plan shows stone from 2013 with a pantile roof, and then the two-storey bit is brick with pantile.
That's good as far as I'm concerned.
Councillor Mason, question?
Question. My question would be then, is there a need for the fence? Would it be better to have the wall tied into the building and have the side of the building as the boundary?
The actual boundary of the property, as I understand it, is the outer edge of that bit of wall that you're looking at. So the fence is pretty much running the boundary. Yeah? But the ground floor of the neighbour's garden is at the bottom of that fence. So the intention is that the fence will stop any encroachment into that air gap, which the floor level of this extension is below that of the neighbour. So I can understand why the neighbour would want to identify the boundary, but you can't identify the boundary with a wall of that thickness. Now the extension's built.
Sorry, can you go back to the gap one again, please? I mean, to me, that looks like a breeze block wall running down the bottom to act as a barrier between the garden and providing an air gap there.
I think there's a retaining wall to a level, which is the ground level, in all probability, of where the neighbours is coming. But this fence is sitting above that. So you've got a gap for the gutter that you're looking at there, and then you're looking at the tiles of the roof. Ultimately, you've got to come back here to what's the public interest in taking anything on about this extension and this wall. And I would say to you, and this is what the conservation officer is saying to you, is pick your battles. It's a small section of wall, there's no public view of it, and we're verging on a property dispute between two neighbours. You can't see that wall, that fence, from any public vantage point.
Any further questions? Councillor Graham.
I just see this as a little getting away with murder because it's retrospective. An offence may not seem like murder, but it's part of a slippery slope. In my view, it's hideous, but that's just my view. But it's not the first time it's happened, and I don't think it'll be the last if they get away with it.
Right. On the basis that was a comment and not a question, I'll now open it up for debate and the local members, Councillor Potter. So, Mike, thanks for being patient, but this is your ward.
All right, thank you, Chair. A couple of comments on the discussion, questions that have gone previously. While this is clearly a listed property, and I've no doubt that mistakes may or have been made in not spotting this as a potential problem, listed properties still have to be livable, energy efficient, and up to modern standards. Now, somebody has wanted to put an extension on here, and an existing stone garden wall is not necessarily suitable to be incorporated into a new building. So it wasn't, I would very much doubt that existing wall would have been suitable as the lower part of the wall of an extension. If you still want an extension and you're on a limited plot, you've got to accept that would have then had to been stepped back from, if you'd have left the wall, you would have had to have left at least a foot or a foot and a half, even for a very thin builder, to get at it. As the wall's been built clearly from the inside with the fence already erected, it won't be very well finished or pointed on the outside. So those are just my my observations on the existing where we are. And my point being, as Gary's already said, we are where we are. This has happened. And as far as I can see, this fence has minimal impact. There would appear to be no viable or sensible alternatives to what is existing now. Even taking the fence down would sort of negate the reason for putting the fence there in the first place. Looking down the gap, I would suspect that what you're looking at the bottom is actually the footings of the wall that's been built, because there would have had to be proper foundation which would have been out, which would have exceeded the width of the wall. So on that basis of we are where we are, minimal impact to anybody. I always find it regrettable that when we have these sort of interleaving, interlinking properties, that people do come up with these little feuds. And it's the way to stop the feud is to say that this fence has minimal impact, and therefore I don't have any problem moving approval in line with the recommendation, because I'm quite sure that the conservation officer has looked at this and on the understanding that we are where we are, what other sensible alternative do we have? So that's it. I'm quite happy to move approval. Thank you.
Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yes, I will second the local member's move. I would say I'm happy. I would say I'd be content to second it. And first of all, just taking a step back and listening to what the officer has quite rightly said, that we have to look at a balanced approach and the public impact, which is minimal. However, I do feel very unhappy, and ignoring the retrospective element, I have a suspicion, and I won't go any further than that, as to why that wall fell down. I think I would disagree with the reasoning that you couldn't that it was taken down because you couldn't integrate it in part of the new build. Anybody not wanting to have taken that wall down or allowed it to come down would have built the extension somewhat further away from it. So I have grave reservations about the whole thing and about how we deal with listed building matters in future. However, base planning principles, what's the public effect? And it is a balanced approach, so again, I am content to second the motion.
Councillor Frank. Councillor Andrews, did you indicate you wanted to add as well? I'm taking Councillor Frank first, but did you indicate?
All I indicated, Chair, was could we have lights on?
Right.
That's all I was going to ask
for. Thank you, Councillor Andrews. Councillor Frank.
Keep talking so I can see you.
I've done quite a lot of planning training over the years, and one of the things that has been repeated to me time and time again is retrospective planning applications. The way you should look at them is, if this came as a planning application, would you approve it or would you turn it down? And I'm sorry, but there's no way I would approve that as a planning application. So therefore, I'm sorry, but I can't vote for this. I shall vote against it.
Chairman, I'm loath to just interject at this point when we're in discussion, but whilst you've been talking, because obviously there's been some history, copies of plans put in the file, and I've come across the plan that was registered in 13209, which was the householder permission. And that permission shows the permission of the utility and pantry to the rear, which is the single-storey bit that we're just looking at, and the kitchen, which is the two-storey bit on ground. And it does show the wall removed as part of that planning permission.
Thank you for that clarification. Can I just say from the chair, it is... She must have done. It's always difficult because these are old cottages, and we've got to make old cottages suitable for modern day living, and perhaps, you know, we've got to take a look back at what's happened in other buildings, somewhere, some of these historic buildings, you can see the changes that have taken place in them, and I think this is been made for modern day living out of a very old cottage. So we are where we are. It's been moved and seconded for approval, so I think we should go to the vote. Thank you, members. Members, that's 8 votes for, 1 abstention and 1 against, so that approval is given. Sorry, members, I'm not proposing we go through the debate and the questions again, but we do have to do the listed building consent approval. Can it be moved and seconded again, please? Thank you very much. Moved by Councillor Botter, seconded by Councillor Cleary. If we can, we'll just go straight to the vote. Thank you. Thank you, members. That's 9 votes for and 1 against. Item 13, members, on page 219 of your agenda. It is a change of use and conversion and alterations and extensions to a domestic outbuildings to form 4 number holiday lets with associated parking, landscaping, construction of equestrian facilities comprising the storage barn stables and an all-weather horse walker at Stonegrave House, Main Street, Stonegrave, Helmsley. We do have a speaker on this later, and I think it's going to Niamh. Niamh's going to take this one. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Stonegrave House is a Grade 2 listed dwelling with associated Grade 2 listed stone outbuildings to the west and with paddocks to the south, and those paddocks extend beyond the extent of this map further south. These are the outbuildings in question here. This is the main dwelling, and this is a present menage. The application seeks approval, as you've heard, for the change of use, conversion, alterations and extensions to domestic outbuildings to form 4 holiday lets with associated parking and the construction of equestrian facilities comprising a storage barn, stables, an all-weather horse walker. And I would emphasise that the equestrian facilities are for private use only of the occupiers of the dwelling. You will be aware that there was a number of representations received that were explored in detail in the officer's report. And there has been one further response available in the late pages. It didn't raise any new material planning considerations, but you've had the opportunity to review that now. And as detailed in the officer's report, there is an associated listed building consent application which will come directly following the determination of this proposal. And as we did also detail in that report, it was the it was concluded that the proposed developments are considered acceptable in principle and align with policy, and that's for both the equestrian elements and the change of use for tourist accommodation. I would note that there was no response from the Parish Council on this proposal. North Yorkshire Highways noted no objections subject to conditions. The Environmental Health Team, who deal with amenity and also aspects relating to equestrian development, confirmed no objection subject to condition. The Area of Outstanding Natural Beauty Manager confirmed no objection on the proposal. And our Building Conservation Officer also confirmed no objection to the proposal. As an update, you will have noted in the report that the Environment Agency were consulted late on this application. We've recently, just this week, received a formal response requiring additional information. Therefore, it's currently noted as an objection at present, but the additionally requested information is currently being prepared by the applicant's agent. Once this is submitted, it will be reconsulted on with the Environment Agency. So it's my request that members delegate the decision to the Head of Planning to be made only once the Environment Agency have received information that they are content with and consider to be acceptable. Sorry, I should have prefaced that by noting the very bottom of the site is located in flood zones 2 and 3 due to the beck that runs alongside it here, but the equestrian development is noted as less vulnerable in terms of classifications, and it wouldn't have any impact on the neighbouring dwellings at this position. Furthermore, I would note that land levels fall to the south of the site. So this is the front of the main dwelling here, and you can just see to the side is the first part of the stone outbuilding that runs along the western boundary of the site. It has been considered that the proposed developments in terms of the alterations to the listed buildings are acceptable. The proposed design is very sympathetic, and very modest interventions are needed in order to facilitate the development. So you can see just some further images of the outbuildings. This is looking at the outbuilding from the western boundary of the site, and you will note there are just two windows here, and that together with existing and proposed roof lighting makes us conclude that there will be no impact upon the amenity of the adjoining property to the west, which is Church Farm. So that is the dwelling of Church Farm there, and the windows themselves are located in this most northerly part of the outbuildings, and any of the new roof lights are located at 1.8 metres or above, having no impact on privacy or any overlooking. So this is the location of the proposed stable building, an agricultural building, and you will have seen from the plans it is quite a sizeable building with a footprint of approximately 464 square metres, but what I would say is that the proportions in terms of roof heights are very low, and as we've described, the land levels fall quite significantly to the south of the site. The proposed materials include Yorkshire boarding to the sides and, following negotiation, an anthracite grey roof, which is considered to be a particularly high quality material. The overall maximum roof height is 5.25 metres, which, considering the topography of the site, is particularly low. And the way the building will be orientated will have the narrower end along the eastern and western axes. And you will be able to see from one of my photographs here, this is taken from the road directly to the east of the site. So that is in full leaf, admittedly, but I think because of the proportions of the building and its distance set away from the road, I think it will have very little street scene impacts. So coming back to the landscaping on the site, this is taken from the very south of the site, and it's looking northwards towards the Manege, and it shows the extremely verdant landscaping that is currently present here. So I think this will have very limited impacts on any neighbouring properties, not only because of the landscaping, but also because of the distances achieved. It's approximately 60 metres from the nearest part of the most closely adjoining property, which is Church Farm, and 110 metres from the residential dwelling. Now, concerns were raised in some of the consultation responses in relation to the impact that additional traffic that the holiday use could generate may have on the village. It's currently a 40 mile per hour limit. And what I would say is we had no objection from the North Yorkshire Highways officer. And following that, following receipt of the representations, I checked with him again, and he is absolutely satisfied that this would have no significant additional impact, because historically there would have been traffic associated with the outbuildings. And as we've already noted, the equestrian buildings for personal use only. And from my two site visits to the site, I know the applicants currently have a number of horses, so I don't think this would have any net increase, but rather it just provides for the existing animals on the site. It may actually have the benefit of limiting certain journeys. In relation to amenity, I have already discussed our consideration that there will be no harm in terms of neighbouring amenity by loss of privacy. There is, you can see here, the units 1 to 3 will have any kind of private sitting out areas because of the positioning of the outbuildings here to the east of that. And they're very significant buildings, so there is a kind of intervening physical element that will prevent any noise impacts or any views from sitting outwards. And this is the smaller unlisted outbuilding, and proposed along with this is a very, very limited footprint of an extension. There is a sitting out area that will be down just to the south of that, but you can see the distance from the neighbouring property and the private amenity space associated with this dwelling. And one of my photographs, I think, illustrates that quite well, in that this is outbuilding number 4, and this is where the patio will be. And this is the kind of directly adjoining part of the rear garden of Church Farm. And you can see there's a really large outbuilding there. This is kind of more of a functional garden space, certainly a great distance away from the actual rear element where sitting out would be undertaken by the occupiers of that property. So environmental health officers are content that there be no loss of impact in terms of amenity. A condition has been recommended tying the management of the holiday lets to the main dwelling. So that has the benefit of an on-site management presence, which I think is really important whenever it comes to holiday lets. So we can be quite confident in the fact that that will be a very immediate on-site presence should there ever be any issues experienced. In terms of the manure management associated with the new equestrian building and agricultural building, as I've noted, the applicants already have animals on site. The current manure heap is 2 fields to the south, which I think was available for you to view on the agenda. This is at a very significant distance. It's not near any residential properties. But just for absolute certainty, a condition has been recommended that the manure management is undertaken in line with the proposals that have been put forward by the agent, which keeps it in that location at a great distance, taken away every 2 to 3 months by a farmer. It's what we see fairly regularly. And also we reserve the right that if there were any issues that we could come back and renegotiate that. There's no issues in terms of ecology. And I would note that the applicants and the agent have opted to relocate the lighting on the proposed equestrian agricultural building to the southeast and southwestern elevations, and that's to try and prevent any form of light pollution. It's very low-level lighting, very limited in number, and that has a dual impact for any kind of bats in the area. So I think I've covered everything. Thank you, Chair.
page.
Oh, I think I did mention that at the start. Just for clarity, in case I didn't mention it at the start, there was an item on the late pages. So I think you have had time to review that. It didn't raise any new material planning considerations that haven't been raised before, but just so you're aware. Thank you.
Thank you, Niamh. Questions from members? Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think on the aerial view, there appeared to be a swimming pool at Church Farm. Can you just confirm that that is a private dwelling and it's not a sort of accommodation provider as well?
Well, I had a look at the planning history for that property, and I think some years ago, and I can't quite recall exactly when that was, there was a permission granted that that could be used as holiday accommodation, but I don't think that is currently in use, and I think by indication of what was received on the late pages, I think the occupier of that property is perhaps unlikely to be running that currently.
Any other questions? On that basis, I think Councillor... Oh, sorry, beg your pardon, there is a speaker. Sorry. My mistake. Sorry, Mr. Saddington, come forward, please. Sorry.
Good evening, everyone. So, thank you for this opportunity. The applicants have proactively engaged with your officers from the outset to ensure that the scheme before you today satisfies both national and local planning policy. This application follows positive pre-application discussions, and the proposal reflects the advice that we received. The committee report confirms that the proposed holiday lets are compliant with policy SP8, which promotes the use of traditional rural buildings for tourism proposals, particularly those buildings that are listed and require a viable future use. Likewise, the proposed equestrian facilities are fully aligned with policy SP9, which lends support to equine development. The principle of development is therefore accepted within the committee report. The proposed development has been carefully designed with residential amenity in mind, particularly that of Church Farm and Stone Grave House itself. The committee report provides a thorough analysis of the impact on amenity and finds that both the holiday lets and the equestrian facilities are suitable in terms of their distance to neighbours, scale, orientation, design and position of windows. In response to the concerns raised by the occupier of Church Farm, the applicant has repositioned openings on the equestrian building and has minimised the amount of external lighting. It's also important to stress that the proposed equestrian facilities are for private use only. The extent of the proposed holiday lets being wholly accommodated within the envelope of the existing buildings, the discreet and sympathetic location of the equestrian facilities, the remaining curtilage available to the house, and the separation to distances to neighbours mean the scheme cannot be regarded as inappropriate or overdevelopment of the site. As mentioned, the local highway authority has raised no objection to the application, acknowledging that the amount of additional traffic generated would be minimal and certainly not detrimental to highway safety or neighbour amenity. Somewhat belatedly, the Environment Agency has asked for the flood risk assessment to be updated to take account of more recent guidance, and we're more than happy to do so, and would ask that the matter be delegated to the Head of Planning, should you be minded to grant planning permission today. There are no other technical objections to the application in terms of highways, ecology or drainage. In summary, the proposed holiday lets will secure a viable use for the listed buildings, will make a positive contribution to the local economy, whilst the equestrian facilities are well conceived in terms of their design, location, intended use, and will not harm the amenity of the neighbouring residents. For those reasons, we would welcome approval of this application and the preceding application for listed building consent. Many thanks for your time.
Any questions? I'll move it into debate. Now, I think the local member, if I'm not mistaken, might be Snowy. So So would you like to pick it up, Jana? I'm not sure. I think it is.
Could possibly be. I'm not sure whether this is in Helmsley Ward or not.
I beg your pardon, Simon. In the absence of the local member, I'll pass it to the nearest local member, which would be Snowy. And as your substitute, Janet, would you pick it
Subbing
up for me?
Snowy, sorry, right. It's quite away from Farndale, but however, I think as long as these buildings are done very carefully, as they're all listed, and we've just had a problem with listed buildings. So I hope that that it's taken into account that they are listed buildings and that everything's done correctly and that they keep a careful eye on the builders once they start doing them. It ticks the boxes, this, because it'll be good for the economy of the area, it'll be good for bringing people in, and as far as I can see, Stonegrave would be a lovely place to spend your holidays, so I'm quite sure once they get these cottages done, they'll be well used. I don't think there's a shop in Stonegrave or anything, which is a shame, because when you have holiday cottages, people usually expect to have that sort of thing. However, we can't build a shop. So I would recommend approval, and I'll recommend the approval for this. Yeah, I think it's fine.
Councillor Frank, Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yes, I'm very happy to second approval. I think this represents a good opportunity for... It is a very lovely house, this. I'm surprised it's actually only listed grade 2, but there you go. That's the way the this listing system goes. It helps to provide a bit of sustainability to a house that would otherwise possibly suffer. My only comment, and I await comments from the flood report, is the amount of concrete down by the horse walker. It's maybe that part of it is going to be a more permeable surface. And again, it's not really a planning matter, it's more of an observation that concrete as laid can get polished over the years and create a hazard to horses. Again, it's an observation rather than a planning problem. So, in conclusion, I will support this application.
Anybody else? Members, it's been moved and seconded. Sorry, Councillor Riley.
This is an observation, and I have not been critical of this application itself. However, it's an observation that, as I understand it, there can be an agricultural restriction on dwellings, houses, which cannot be sold as a non-agricultural house. And it seems just strange to me that farm buildings could be created into dwellings for holidaymakers. And at the same time, from what I understand with the planners, one of the criteria of the area, we must have low-cost housing for workers. This doesn't create it. But this looks a fine scheme to me, but it's just an observation on the strangeness of planning.
Chairman, it's in the conditions, these are limited to holiday purpose. There's an occupancy condition on them, in effect. So they're in the conditions there.
Members, it's been moved and seconded for approval. Can we go to the vote, please? Thank you, members. That's unanimous, but I do think we've got to do it again because we've got the listed building consent bit to do as well. I'm not proposing to go into questions or debate again, so if we can move straight on with that, that would be useful.
Thank you, Chair. I've actually got all of the same photographs again, so I won't run through them. But as you're aware, the Building Conservation Officer had no objection to the proposal. Within the listed building and the full application, there are a number of conditions in relation to the historic fabric of the Grade 2 listed outbuildings. So I think by the imposition of these, we are going to secure what is a really high quality conversion with limited impact on the historic fabric of the building. So I think that's all I have to say in this matter. Thank you, Chair.
If members are happy, could we have it moved and seconded again, and then we can go to the vote? Councillor Tank, thank you. Councillor Cleary is seconding. Thank you, members. That's unanimous. Members, move on to item 15, which is a certificate of lawfulness with regard to a biomass boiler at High Hag Farm, Hag Road, Kirby Moorside. Are you taking this?
Yes.
Mr. Howison's taking this one.
Thank you, Councillor Goodrick. Chairman, this is not a planning application, it's a certificate of lawfulness, and the reason it's before you is it's been submitted by Councillor Cousins. So it's a decision that is required through the scheme of delegation to be dealt with by committee rather than as a delegated matter. And these are, I think this must be, we must have about a dozen of these going through the mill at the moment, and the clue is at the bottom of page 267 is that not know why it's now rather than any other years in the past, Ofgem require a certificate that states that the biomass boilers meet the renewable heat incentive requirements, and we are now facing ourselves with certificates and planning applications for things that have either never applied for or never had planning permission because people either didn't know they needed them or whatever. So at the moment we must have at least half a dozen current live applications for things which are biomass boilers on farm complexes that have been there for years. This is one of those, and as you can see from the evidence that's been submitted, there's been a boiler on this site for probably getting on for 15 years, and the most recent one was replaced over 4 years ago, so clearly it's lawful. When I show you the pictures of it, you'll think, why on earth is it before us tonight? But it's councillor's application, so here's where we are. And so those of you familiar with High Hag Farm, I'm trying not to burn Jill's retinas as I put the pink there. So you've got Hag Road, the main group of traditional farm buildings and more modern farm buildings located behind, and the biomass boiler and flue is actually inside this building. That's what it's all about. It's been there, or a biomass boiler has been there for some considerable period of time, this most recent one for a period exceeding 4 years, and so therefore on the balance of probabilities we should issue a certificate. We aren't dealing with the planning merit, it's a matter of law, and the law suggests that we should grant Councillor Cousins a certificate. That's it. Questions?
Questions, Councillor Andrew.
Yes, so rather than go through through all the procedures, it seems the evidence is there. There's nothing we can do about the evidence, so can we just have a vote on it?
Councillor Ryby.
Seeing I'm covering this area, I don't have a problem with it. I don't think it makes any difference to me or my constituents or my neighbours. So I would suggest, as Councillor Andrews suggests, we just vote on it and approve.
Councillor Cleary?
I entirely agree. It does show that actually we are transparent about how we do business. So I'll briefly say that just for the sake of saying it, but I wouldn't want to delay the matter any further.
I was just about to say, do you think... thank you, Councillor Frank. Councillor Hope, thank you very much for seconded. So it's been moved and seconded for approval. Members, please can we go to the vote? Thank you. Thank you, members. That's unanimous. We are now at item 16 to consider, which is a notice on motion with regard to the ride-out plan. And this is the report of Mr. House.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Sorry, that's fine. Yes, the report covers a proposed response to the motion which was referred to this committee by Council. Madam Chairman, I have nothing to add to the report at this stage.
On the basis that I hope all members have read the report, does anybody have any questions? Councillor Andrews.
Yes, Chair. Two questions. First of all, I understand that the dealing with the revision of the local plan has been transferred to policy and resources. Is that correct? And I have another question afterwards.
Councillor Andrews, policy and resources have taken that deliberation, but it still has to be ratified because it's a Part B item and it needs to go to full council.
Thank you, Chair. Second point is to the address to the planning officers. Now that we've seen the local plan in operation for 5 years, bearing in mind the amount of traffic congestion in Moulton, would they accept that some serious errors have been made?
Absolutely not. And I think to be partial in your question, I think is flying in the face of the evidence that development brings problems. Development on the top end of the town where the new roundabout exists is considerably assisted in the functioning of the junction and the traffic coming in from Brown Road into the town. The local plan made it clear that there were 5 critical junctions in the town, and none of those would be improved without the benefit of development that brings solutions. Taylor Wimpey spent £1.5 million putting that roundabout in, which is a new road junction, which has taken away a poorly functioning 4-way traffic light with pedestrian control on it as well, which every day led to congestion into the town. Now, I'm not suggesting that there aren't other congestion issues in the town, other junctions that require improvement, but actually, in that set of circumstances, we came up with a strategy which distributed development around, I'll say, the towns, Moulton and Norton, and the biggest remaining allocation in Beverley Road, which is now part of the adopted sites document, if it goes ahead, will provide a link road which provides an access out to the A64 and a link through from Beverley Road to the industrial estate, thereby easing congestion in Wood Street and Commercial Street. So, no, I don't accept that. There are challenges, but they get dealt with through the planning application process, and the sites document and the strategy has given us the ammunition to deal with that.
Any other member with questions? Can we move into debate? Councillor Andrew.
Yes, Chair. First of all, can I say that the purpose of the motion is to allow the country areas to take their fair share of new development. And it's not it's not to stop what is already in the plan. It's what happens after what is in the plan has been completed. I can say that for me, there was a single issue in the last election, and that was the overdevelopment of Moulton and the amount of traffic that has been generated by new development in Moulton. Looking at the recommendation. I will accept that recommendation number two is correct. I always did accept that there would happen that the policies that were put forward would have to go through a process. And the planning officers are quite right to remind me of that fact, and their wording is better than mine. If you want to summarise what the various policies are, it's basically a means of ensuring to allow that the countryside is allowed to take its fair share of new development. The issue that I have with this report is the refusal to recommend that we refer this matter to consultants. There is a great deal of anger in the town. People feel that they have been, people in Moulton feel that they have been misled, disregarded, treated like Cinderellas, if you like, that the policies that were put forward in the Rydale plan did not really take into account the requirements of Moulton and Norton. To give you an example, I've sent round, hopefully every member's got it, a copy of a report of a former highways engineer who served this area for 30 years, and he set out to the inspector in simple terms on the basis of what the impact of six vehicle movements per dwelling, per new dwelling, would have in regard to creating or exacerbating congestion in the town. That wasn't good enough for the county, because the county got a computer model. The trouble about computer models is that it's very difficult to understand them unless you are an expert. It's a case of garbage in and garbage out. And if, say, the computer model is based on what you would expect in Harrogate, or what you would expect in Barnsley, or in Blackpool, or in some other urban area, Chair, if that is what the computer model is based on, then of course you will get to a situation where what comes out of that computer is something that is not appropriate to a rural market town such as Moulton and Norton.
Councillor Andrews, we are at 3 minutes and you need to be wrapping this up, please.
Yes, I will do. We all know what the situation of traffic is like in Moulton and Norton. I don't have to go into great detail about it. But the fact that the officers are saying that they can't see that any mistakes have been made suggests to me because of what I've said before, an entirely fresh look needs to be taken into the matter.
Councillor
Andrews. Therefore, my request is, and my proposal is, that this committee agrees to the appointment of a consultant or recommends it.
Councillor Andrews, I'm going to stop you. I know you've probably just finished, but you've had more than a fair share. Councillor Cleary, you indicated, please.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm not quite sure what the mover of the motion has actually moved it or is adjusting it. However, I'll speak to the report, which I will move that we accept the recommendation. And my reasoning for this is I, too, await the review of the local plan. There are changes, I think, that I can suggest. However, I think it will be a light hand on the tiller that we need, and I quite understand Councillor Andrews mentions anger. However, we have to look at things in the cold light of day and put anger to one side. The wording of the motion certainly leads to preemption, which we just cannot deal with. I really do look forward to the review and to any changes that council recommends. I will certainly be contributing to the review. I think certainly we all know that there are some minor amendments. Councillor Andrews mentions further development out of towns, and all other things being equal, I could certainly go along with that. But I think that the way that the motion has been put and the advice that we've been given is that we cannot go with it. And therefore, I will be suggesting that we go with the recommendation and that council accepts that as we recommend it. Is that the wording that will help us forward?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Thank you, Councillor Cleary. I'm going to second the officer's recommendation, and I'm going to make the following observations. You know, we are at a review of the plan, and it's an important review, and we've got to retain control of what goes on. And I don't disagree that you believe Moulton and Norton have taken an unfair share, but this is the most sustainable location in the district for development. We've heard tonight that we've got very tight boundaries in our countryside locations in villages where we can't go outside the development limits, and we need to look at those as part of the review process. They haven't been looked at, I don't think, since 2002. Some of our officers live in Moulton and are more than aware of what's going on in Moulton. So I think it's all part of the whole process. We've got villages that would have to access onto the A64. We all know the problems at Flaxton and at Barton Hill of accessing onto the A64. We've got the doubling of trains through the Moulton Town Centre. It's all part of the review process, and it's important that we all feed into that review process. But we've got to keep control of it here. If it's very brief, Councillor Andrews, you've already spoken on this item. You only get one chance to speak. You know this is part of the Constitution.
This is one sentence, Chairman. I'm agreeing with what you've all said. The thing I'm not agreeing with, and the thing that I've proposed, is that in order to make sure that somebody takes a fresh look at this, this matter is referred to consultants. That was my proposal.
Well, I hear what you're saying, Councillor Andrews, but as we bring in and we have expert advice coming in, consultants, if they are needed, will be approached to do that. The motion has been moved and seconded as it stands. I would ask members, if there's no one else wants to contribute to this debate, that we go to the vote. Thank you, members. That's 8 votes for, 1 abstention and 1 against. Members, item 17. I'm sorry that we seem to have belaboured it tonight, but it is part of a delegated power and a consultation from North Yorkshire County Council with regard to a planning application by Third Energy in the Vale of Pickering. Councillor Mason, I believe you have to leave. Sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yes, we've been asked to provide a response to a consultation from NYCC, the Minerals and Waste Planning Authority, on a package of 8 applications that they've been asked to determine. 7 applications look to extend the life of existing permissions of wells across the Vale of Pickering gas field, and 1 application is seeking permission for the drilling of an additional borehole at the Kirby Misfitten site. I think on the face of it, and when you read the descriptions of the development proposed, that the developers are seeking an extension of time
as well as the additional borehole, to continue consented activities. So that's the exploitation of conventional gas. I think when you look in more detail at the supporting information that makes it clear that these applications are justified, in part at least, on the basis that they'll extend the life of this infrastructure, which again is in part necessitated by some trials of conventional gas from bypass gas recovery, but also in terms of the assessment of the potential exploitation from unconventional gas sources, so that's hydraulic fracturing. So in view of this, the suggested response is that we reiterate this council's opposition to hydraulic fracturing, and that that we reiterate really that if the applications are determined, they're determined on the basis of the development that's actually applied for. So that's the continuation of the conventional activities, and not in support of development, which may or may not happen in the future. Madam Chairman, there is a proposed draft response at paragraph 6.9 of the report. Members may wish to add to that or amend that as they see fit. Thank you.
Thanks, Jill. I'm going to move this from the chair to get so that we can enter debate. Have I got a seconder for this? Thanks, Councillor Potter. And now we'll move into debate. Councillor Andrews.
Yes, Chair. I think this recommendation could be strengthened. I mean, I think the situation that we see, or that we're told of by Third Energy, or we have been told by Third Energy, is that there isn't enough gas for conventional means to make exploration viable. So therefore, they're either intending to use the restored pipes to further the fracking process, or else they're trying to get an extension of time so that they don't have to cap and do all the restoration works that would be necessary in order to make the wells they've got, which they might never want to use again, or might only use to an uneconomic extent, to make them safe. Now, I don't think that we should have wells all over the place, which are going to be simply kept there just because the company doesn't want to spend the money to cap them and to properly disengage them, or whatever else they do. But if on the other hand they want the material for that, they want to do this for the purpose of promoting fracking, then obviously they've got to go through another planning process, and that planning process would have to have regard to the North Yorkshire plan. And I can't see how it would pass the North Yorkshire plan in its present form. And I would therefore suggest that instead of simply saying that we haven't got sufficient information, we should actually ask North Yorkshire to kill this application dead, kill all these applications dead. And I would say, Chair, of course, this isn't our decision, it's only a recommendation to North Yorkshire County Council, so we're not going to there are no consequences for us to do this. And I think we should make those very strong recommendations.
Councillor Ryber, you indicated. Thank you, Councillor Andrews. Councillor Ryber.
I know that probably I'm out of sync with the majority of people in this room, but I fail to understand this. We don't want energy at any price, and we shouldn't have it out of our own backyard. We noticed this last week, the generator shut down, and they make all sorts of excuses, but the truth is we're short on energy, we're short on it, we can't produce the electricity we need. And even in the summer, it clicked out last week, and lots of people were stranded in the underground and goodness knows where. And I, you know, people that say we shouldn't have homegrown energy want to explain to people that are stuck in an underground tube for 3 hours the reason why. So I am not against gas pipes, gas wells, and I'm pro production of energy in the areas.
Thank you, Councillor Ryby. Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think we missed out on questions, and I actually have got a question for Jill. Oh, that's all right. In the middle of the proposed response, it says, however, against a context of declining conventional gas production, and I would suggest that it was actually significantly declining conventional gas production, because that is the key point. These applications are for a continuation of conventional extraction, conventional wells. And the figures that I last saw indicated there was little or probably no conventional gas production, and hasn't been for years because the wells are watered out, other than I think a very small amount coming from the Marish's one. So the question to Jill is, were there any figures in these applications that you've seen for actual gas production over the last whatever, however many years?
I can't recall seeing detailed figures. I know that they did refer to declining production, and I think that referring to at least two well sites where effectively there's no production at all. I can't recall seeing detailed figures, but there is an awful lot of support and information. Whether or not it's in the depths of some technical study that I haven't seen, I can't confirm that. It's just that I haven't seen it. Certainly not in the planning statement, not detailed in the planning statement. But I think that's why the response was structured the way it was. It almost feels anomalous that this is what the description of the development is. This is what they're applying for against a context of declining production. Where's the justification that the extension of time is actually needed? That's what seems to be me looking at these, you know, straight away just seem to be very anomalous. And I think that's something that we should be raising with North Yorkshire when they're considering the applications. Because if I can't see that information, I'm not sure where it is for them to see either.
Right. Yeah, if I could just expand on that. Thanks for the response, Jill. I think listening to what Councillor Ryby has said, it is completely irrelevant, because as this report and the recommendation clearly say, these are applications to extend conventional gas extraction. And the conventional gas extraction is not working. They haven't been getting any gas out, so therefore, why is there any, or is there any justification for extending these, and particularly for an extremely long period of 17 years? And I can't see there's any justification, because if there was gas there, they'd have been trying to get it out, or they would have been getting it out. So I can only see that this extension is somewhat disingenuous in keeping all their sites alive for fracking. Well, that's all well and good, but it's a completely separate matter. And if they want to frack and use these sites as saying, yes, these are available sites, they're ours, we've got infrastructure on them, so we're going to use them, they need to put in applications for exactly that. And that requires the whole gamut of the consultation, the environmental impact studies, the whole works. So in terms of exactly, precisely what this is trying to do, they're trying to extend these conventional resources
for something that is no longer there. There isn't any energy under our feet to get out in conventional terms. And I believe that that is an excellent response that Jill has produced, and I'm quite happy to support it. Thank you.
Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yes. In fact, a lot of what I was going to say has been answered not only in Councillor Potter's presentation but also his question. So I'll leave that bit. I have a lot of sympathy for what Councillor Ryberry said. I'm not against gas and using gas locally. I've said, and this isn't about fracking, but it's been raised, so I'll just answer it, that I've nothing against fracking per se, but it's all the other things that go on with it. In this area, we can't sustain it. However, what we have to do here is look at the response, and I agree entirely with Councillor Potter's suggestion that the response is forward as shown, and I'm very happy to second that motion.
Councillor Potter, if you go to 6.6 of the recommendation, sorry, what was it? 6.9, beg your pardon. It says, there's a sentence, however, against a context of declining. Do you want to add the word significant in there?
I'd quite like to, but it would really depend on whether the figures were available to back that up. And I can't honestly remember where I'd seen those figures, but I'm 99% sure that I've seen there has been virtually no production for quite a number of years now, and it stuck in my mind that the only one that was producing, and in a very minor way, was the Marish's well site. So, yeah, I would say it is significant. Thank you.
Councillor Cleary.
I too would be very interested to know what the actual production figures are. I wouldn't, for the sake of this response, get too hung up on it, because there could be any number of reasons why production isn't happening. The market price of gas, for one thing, rather than what's actually underneath us, and I wouldn't actually want to hang our reasoning on the basis on the production figures, but who knows.
Councillor Andrews.
I do have difficulties with the word significant, because significant could mean anything. Can we use the word that we all understand, which means the word substantial? My understanding is, Chair, that it's the difficulties. It's not the case of market conditions that's stopping gas coming out of the ground. It's the fact that there isn't very much more gas left.
Can I ask Jill, are you happy with this? Can we check to see what this amount of volume of gas is?
I'll certainly go back and check the supporting material, and if it's, you know, if we can use a word such as substantial, then we can.
Are you happy for officers to add that in if we can use that word? Yeah. Okay. I've got to say I'm very happy with the officer's response. I'm slightly uncomfortable with the fact that I think this is a way of extending the life of the current wells in order to achieve unconventional gas extraction. If I'm not mistaken, the permissions actually have run out. They should be really looking to decommission this site, and I'm uncomfortable with extending it for 17 years without actually knowing what's going on. So I'm very happy to support the officer's response to this. In fact, I'd like it to go a bit further, but I'm not sure if I can do that without the proper figures and the proper information. So we'll leave it as it is, other than checking those figures. Councillor Andrews.
That's just my concern, Chair, because if you simply say we're just waiting for further information, it sort of rather makes it sound as though if we get that further information, we would agree with it, and it sort of almost gives the green light, and I would like to see some firming up of the wording. I mean, I think we've all discussed this. I think we all understand exactly what the concerns are. and I think we're actually all agreed on it. It's just tightening up the wording, which I would really like to see.
Thank you, Councillor Andrews. I don't know whether we can or we can't, because who's to say what is substantial or not? And until we get the figures, I don't think we can even go there, can we?
Well,
I think that's if members are happy with that. Now, Councillor Potter, did you move it?
No, I moved it
from the chair. You seconded it. That's fine. I'm just forgive me. I'm just slightly losing the plot here. I'm happy to leave it to the officers if it can be beefed up to beef it up. If every member's happy with that, we can go to the vote. Thank you, members. That's unanimous. All right. Any other business? The next thing on the agenda is any other business, and I don't have any other business. Item 19 is the list of delegated decisions by officers at page 2. I think it's 286. And then the only other thing we've got to do, members, is figure a date for the site visit to the Wombleton application that was at the beginning of the meeting.
On that, Chairman, I mean, ordinarily we're usually deferring something and thinking the application's going to come back to the next meeting. I somehow don't think that probably will be the case with this particular one. But I think the more people that could visit the site, the better. I think with that particular application at Wombleton Airfield, and to get onto the airfield as well to fully appreciate it. August, an awful month because people tend to be away on holidays. And I'm just wondering, ordinarily we would be visiting on the 27th of August, but I'm just wondering if doing it a week later, because you've got the bank holiday week that week as well, maybe the 3rd of September, say, or something of that ilk. I think that's probably a September date is probably more likely to get more people able to attend, I think.
Tuesday.
Yeah, so if we go for a sort of any preferred start time, half nine, ten? Yeah, okay, well, we'll go for a morning start then.
Yeah.
Thank you. I think of Councillor Potter, he'll be cycling. Half 8. 10 o'clock then. Okay.
Thank you, members, for your patience. I'll declare the meeting closed. Thank you very much.